Today is the day that the Christian world has set aside to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. This just happens to be one of the few days where it actually falls on the correct date. There's a variety of different beliefs and understandings as to what this event really means. Today we hope to show what the Bible teaches regarding this important feature of God's plan. We're going to start out by asking some questions, and then we'll proceed to provide the answers as given in the scriptures. We would also like to hear from you. So if at any time during the service you have an additional question, please raise your hand and we'll try to answer them to your satisfaction. Our questions are, why did Jesus become human? Or did he just seem to be a man while actually remaining a spirit being? Why did Jesus have to die? And did he really die, or did he just pretend to die? Why did Jesus suffer? Why did he die on the cross? And what is the importance of his resurrection? To answer these questions, we're going to tell a story. It's a story about justice and love mixed together with wisdom and executed by limitless power. It began a long time ago. The scriptures tell us it started before the foundation of the world, one of Sister Joy's favorite sayings. To get an idea of when that was, we have to consider what the foundation of the world is. Well, it's the universe, time and space. Scientists estimate that the universe is between 13 and 14 billion years old. So that means this story began long before that. When Jehovah God was alone, he decided to create other living beings, some of which would have intelligence and be able to commune and reason with himself. He also determined that these intelligent beings would have free moral agency, which is the ability to choose to do right or wrong. God's first and only direct creation was Jesus, who at that time was called the Logos, which means the Word of God. The Logos was then given the responsibility by God to create everything else that was or ever is to be made. The first beings to be created were spiritual, such as angels, cherubim, and seraphim, and so forth. We are not told how long it took to accomplish these processes, but it is reasonable to assume that it was a very long time. After this, the universe was created as the foundation for Earth. The earth was then formed and gradually prepared to support life. When the earth was ready for life, the Bible tells us that the man, Adam, was created from the dust of the earth, not evolved. Adam was placed in the Garden of Eden, where everything for his health and happiness was provided. Additionally, his happiness also depended upon his being obedient to God. The Lord Jehovah tested Adam's obedience by telling him that he could eat of all the trees in the garden, except for one grove containing the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil. And God declared, "In the day that thou eat of this fruit, dying thou shalt die." God saw that Adam was lonely, so he took a rib from Adam's side and made Eve to be his companion. They were told to multiply and fill the earth. And if they continued to obey God, they and their offspring would live in perfection forever. Then Satan came along, appearing as a servant, and deceived Eve. convincing her to eat of the forbidden fruit. Eve then gave the fruit to Adam to eat. Now, Adam was not deceived, as was Eve. He ate fully knowing that it was wrong and what the consequences would be. As a result of their disobedience, Adam and Eve received the penalty that God had declared, that is, death. Since a day with the Lord is 1,000 years, they died within that day. In order to carry out his sentence, God drove the pair out of the garden where all their needs had been provided. There they had to fend for themselves among the thorns and thistles. But before driving them out of the garden, God provided a hint of hope that not all was lost. He said that the serpent, Satan, would bruise the heel of Eve's offspring. That is not a fatal wound. But that Eve's offspring would bruise the head of the serpent, which is a fatal wound. Since Adam and Eve had sinned and were now fallen from perfection, their children, all born after their fall, could only inherit imperfect bodies and minds. As a result, the penalty of Adam and Eve incurred by disobedience has been passed down to all generations since then. God's perfect and exacting justice said, "Obey and live. Disobey and die." So when Adam and Eve incurred the death penalty, God's justice was satisfied. Nothing else was needed to be done. But God's plan included more, much more. As years and years have gone by, the human family has grown in numbers and has also fallen deeper and deeper into sin. But occasionally, God has provided some more hints that he intended to help the fallen human race. Why was such a long time allowed for mankind to continue living in this sinful condition? Well, one, God had told the first pair to multiply and fill the earth. And that takes time. Two, God also wanted his human family to learn the devastating results of sin, that it only continues to spread, getting worse and worse, like a cancer, for which there is no cure, except by outside intervention. The scriptures tell us that God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten Son to bring the opportunity of everlasting life. And in due time, Jesus was sent to save the human race by dying. So how does that work? The Logos became a human by being miraculously born of Mary. But since God was his father, he was still perfect and did not inherit the fallen condition of the rest of mankind. And why is this important? God's exact justice requires an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, and a life for a life. Since Adam and all the human race in him were perfect before he sinned, it would require that another perfect human life must die in his place in order to pay that ransom price. Because all mankind inherited the sinful condition from the original pair, there was no one on earth who could become the ransom, that is, an equal life for Adam. God could not accept any other form of life, such as an animal or an angel, to pay for Adam's penalty. The value of that ransom had to be exact. A perfect human life for a perfect human life. So now we can see why the Logos had to become the perfect man, Jesus, in order to pay Adam's penalty, which was death. Also, since Adam was a full-grown man when he sinned, Jesus also had to be a man and not a boy in order to be an equal substitute or ransom for Adam. This is why Jesus did not present himself to God until he was 30 years old, which under the Jewish law was the age of manhood. Thus we see that Jesus had to become human, and he had to be perfect, in order to pay the original penalty incurred in the Garden of Eden. And since death was the penalty that Adam incurred, then death was the price that Jesus had to pay. If Jesus had died the moment after he was baptized, this would have provided the payment for Adam's penalty, which is called the ransom. But this alone would not have fulfilled the plan of God, nor would it really help the human race in the long run. This ransom price would only remove the penalty for Adam and the entire human race, but it would not remove the effects of sin from each individual. If the ransom was paid and the human race restored to life, each person would still have the very same character they had when they died, with all of its selfish, sinful desires, weaknesses, and frailties. Thus, none would be able to do perfectly, which the justice of God requires, without leniency. The end result would be that each one would be condemned to death again, individually. God foresaw this and lovingly planned a solution. To assist the human race after they are released from the death penalty, Jehovah provided what the scriptures call the sin offering. This allows for a process to remove the effects of sin and bring all people who want it back to the perfection which Adam had before he sinned. And the reason we say who want it is because God will not force anyone. He gave his intelligent creatures free moral agency, and they have the right and the responsibility to make the decision on what they want and don't want. So this sin offering provision was that Jesus suffered while he was a man, so that he became sympathetic to this restored human race, and he would be able to assist each one back to perfection. No one is beyond God's reach if they want it. They will then be approved of God as perfect and be able to live as his children in perfection and blissful happiness forever. In order to accomplish this, Jesus had to be resurrected, because if he was still dead, he could do nothing. But he wasn't raised as a man again. This would have meant that he had taken back the human life, which had been laid down for Adam. In that case, Adam and all his offspring would still be under the penalty of death. So Jesus was raised as a spiritual being of the divine nature. The Jewish law promised that if anyone kept the law perfectly, that they had the right to live forever. Jesus did keep the law perfectly, and since he gave or laid down his life, it was not forfeited or taken from him. He has the right to perfect human life. He still has that right to perfect human life, even after his resurrection as a divine spirit being. It is this right to perfect life that he will give to justice to pay Adam's death penalty, and thus redeem Adam and the entire human race. Thus we see the reason why Jesus did not die as he was baptized. He lived for another 3.5 years amongst sinful humans, experiencing pain and suffering, healing the sick and disabled, using his own vitality to do this, and preaching of God's coming blessed kingdom, which brought upon him persecution. When the 3.5 years was ended, Jesus was hung on the cross to die. We may well ask, why this form of execution? In answer, we must consider that the nation of Israel was under condemnation, just like the rest of the human race through Adam. But beyond this, God had made a covenant with them called the Law Covenant, which stated that if they would keep his law, they would live. They agreed to do that, but it turned out that they couldn't. So this placed them under a second condemnation, in addition to the original one. The scriptures say that cursed is everyone who is hung upon a tree. So by Jesus dying on the cross, a tree, and being cursed thereby, his death by this method would remove the extra condemnation which Israel had incurred. So why hasn't the kingdom been set up yet? And why has there been such a long time since Jesus died? The time between Jesus' death and the setting up of this wonderful kingdom was part of God's original plan. Remember, from before the foundation of the earth. This time period is for the purpose of choosing 144,000 individuals from the fallen, imperfect race to be tested and proved trustworthy of the privilege of sharing in Christ's glorious kingdom as his associates to bless all the families of the earth. In the scriptures, this is called the mystery hidden from the ages. These individuals have nothing in themselves to make them better than others, but God is working with these to develop in them a character like his own. This will show his power in being able to take from the lowest of the fallen race and prepare them for an eternity of faithful service to others. The glory and honor will be his, not theirs. When this work is completed, then the kingdom will be set up, which we believe is coming very soon. Then for 1,000 years, mankind will learn the benefits of righteousness, just as for the last 6,000 years, they've learned the disadvantage of unrighteousness. And then, armed with the knowledge of both good and evil, remember the forbidden fruit, the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil? Each individual will be able to intelligently choose righteousness and live forever, or choose the old evil ways and die again. That will be a permanent death. No suffering, just non-existence. For death is the absence of life. From that point forward, there will be an eternity of blessings and happiness for all the remainder of God's creatures. Think about it. A place where there is no more sin, or fear, or sorrow, or dying, or aches, or pain, or worries, not even the possibility of such things. No struggles or drudgery or unfulfilled needs or wants, a place where your time and effort will be filled with the things you want to do, the places you want to see, and the things that you want to experience. And added to this blessing, blessings from God beyond anything we can even imagine now. Close your eyes for a moment to the scenes of misery and woe, degradation, sorrow that yet prevail on account of sin, and picture before your mental vision the glory of the perfect earth. Not a stain of sin mars the harmony and peace of a perfect society, nor a bitter thought, not an unkind look or word. Love welling up from every other heart meets a kindred response in every other heart, and benevolence marks every act. There, sickness shall be no more, not an ache or a pain, nor any evidence of decay, not even the fear of such things. Think of all the pictures of comparative health and beauty of human form and feature that you have ever seen, and know that perfect humanity will be of still surpassing loveliness. The inward purity and mental and moral perfection will stamp and glorify every radiant countenance. Such will Earth's society be, and weeping bereaved ones will have their tears all wiped away when they thus realize the resurrection work complete. And this is the change in human society only. We call to mind also that the earth, which was made to be inhabited by such a race of beings, is to be a fit and pleasing abode for them, as represented in the Edenic paradise, in which representative man was first placed. Paradise shall be restored. The earth shall no more bring forth thorns and briars and require the sweat of man's face to yield his bread, but the earth shall easily and naturally yield her increase. The desert shall blossom as a rose. The lower animal creation will be perfect, willing, and obedient servants. Nature, with all its pleasing variety, will call to man from every direction to seek and know the glory and power and love of God, and mind and heart will rejoice in him. The restless desire for something new that now prevails is not a natural but an abnormal condition. Due to our imperfection and to our present unsatisfactory surroundings, it is not godlike restlessly to crave something new. The perfect man most things are old to God, and he rejoices most in those things which are old and perfect. So it will be with man when restored to the image of God. The perfect man will not know or appreciate fully, and hence will not prefer the glory of a spiritual being because of a different nature, just as fishes and birds, for the same reason, prefer and enjoy each their own nature and element most. Man will be so absorbed and enraptured with the glory that surrounds him on the human plane that he will have no aspiration to nor preference for another nature or other conditions than those possessed. To summarize, why did Jesus become human, or did he just seem to be a man while actually remaining a spirit being? A perfect human life was needed to redeem a lost perfect human life. So Jesus actually became a human being. Why did Jesus have to die? Did he really die, or did he just pretend to die? God's justice required a life for a life. So Jesus actually died in order to pay Adam's penalty and redeem the whole human race. Why did Jesus suffer? His suffering made him sympathetic toward fallen man so that he could better help them back from the effects of 6,000 years of sin and degradation. Why did Jesus die on the cross? This form of death removed the secondary curse which Israel incurred under the law covenant. And why is it important for him to be resurrected? If he was not resurrected, he could not help the human race back to perfection so that God could approve of them and bless them with an eternity of life and happiness. Are there any questions that you have that you would like to ask? Bob?
I was just curious what the purpose of celebrating the memorial is for the cross.
Okay, the question is, what is the purpose of celebrating the memorial? The Jewish nation, after they left Egypt, celebrated the Passover. They ate a lamb with leavened bread, unleavened bread, which shows perfect humanity, and partook of bitter herbs. This they were required to celebrate every year, and that was in memory of the passing over of the firstborn as the last plague that delivered Israel from Egypt. Well, that lamb that they ate represented Jesus' death. The passing over of the firstborn meant the period of time, the passing over of the church, which is being developed. We talked about the 144,000. The deliverance of Israel, who represented the world of mankind, was shown in their crossing the Red Sea. And the destruction of Egypt, or the Egyptian army, including Pharaoh, is a picture of the destruction of Satan and all those who desire to follow his evil ways. The memorial is once Jesus actually came and died, represented in that slain lamb for Israel's observance, was no longer appropriate to celebrate the process because he, the Lamb of God, was slain for the whole world of mankind. So instead, he instituted a celebration whereby the importance of his death be remembered. And that's what the memorial is for those that see that privilege and opportunity to partake of that, recognizing their association with their pledge to serve God and follow after Jesus Christ, who was the Lamb slain from before the foundation of the earth. Hopefully that answers your question. Are there any other questions that we can answer, or at least try to? If not, we'll go ahead and thank you.